Tonight's shiur is on this week's parsha, Parshas Vayeshev, and the title of the shiur tonight is Embarrassing Lessons from Tamar. So tonight we're going to look at the end of the story between Yehuda and Tamar, and I always had a question on the end, a portion where Tamar is brought out to be killed. So we'll look at the psukim and try to analyze, you know, why or what element of that story is interesting, to me, I found interesting. So we'll start with Bereishis Perek Lamed Ches. It's in source sheet number one. And after Yehuda finds out, a little background, after it's found out that Tamar is pregnant, and it's not clear what happened, Yehuda is not aware that he was the one who slept with Tamar. So it says in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, Vayhi kemishlosh chadashim, vayugad liyehuda leimor, zansa Tamar kal sechla, vegam hine hara lezunim, vayomer Yehuda hotziuha v'sisareif. So after 3 months, it was told to Yehuda, his daughter-in-law Tamar had become pregnant through harlotry, and Yehuda was upset, and he says, take her out to be burnt. So she's chayiv misa, she's obligated, there's an obligation to kill her, because of the fact that she prostituted herself. So in Chafei it says, "Hi mutzeis, v'hi shalcha el chamiya lemor le'ish asher eila lo anochi hara v'tomer." So she was taken out to be burnt, and she sends a letter to her father-in-law, Yehuda, and she says, whoever owns these things, the things that were traded in for her services, that person is the one who got me pregnant. And she says, recognize, examine these entities, the seal, the cords, and the mata, the staff. And obviously it was Yehuda's, and it says, Vayakir Yehuda Vayomer Tzadka Mimeni Ki Al Kain Lunasatia L'Sheila V'ni V'lo Yasaf Od L'Data. So Yehuda acknowledges the fact that he was wrong, that he impregnated Tamar, but ultimately he should have given Tamar to Sheila, his son, his third son. And it says, V'lo Yasaf Od L'Data to Machlokes, between the Mefarshim as to what that means, but the pshat is that he never was intimate with her again. That was the last time he was intimate with her. So the end of the story between Tamar and Yehuda tells us that Yehuda says that Tamar is chayv misa, she's chayv to be burnt. She's brought out to be burnt, and ultimately she sends a message to her father-in-law to recognize the items that were given to her in exchange for her service, and Yehuda admits, that she was right and he was wrong. So if we look in Rashi over there, I mean, the main question I'm going to ask, but we'll see it in Rashi even greater, is why did she set it up, Hakir Na? Why did she set it up that Yehuda should recognize these items and he should, on his own, admit to the fact that he had gotten her pregnant? Why doesn't she just say, Yehuda was the one who got me pregnant? And so look in Rashi. It says in source number two, Himut Seis Lisarif. So she was brought out to be burnt. Vihi Shalcha El Chamiya, source number two. L'ratisa L'halbin Panav. The Lomar, Mimech ani Mimcha ani Muberes. She didn't want to embarrass Yehuda and say that you were the one who impregnated me. Ella the Isha Sher Ela Lo, but she's hiding it. It's secretive. Whoever these belong to, he's the one who impregnated me. Amra im Yoda me'atzmo Yoda. She said, if he admits to it on his own, then he admits to it. Vim lav yisrfuni, and if not, I'll be burnt. Val albin panav, but I'd rather be burnt that embarrass Yehuda. Mikan amru noach lo la'adam shiapiluhu lekivshana esh v'al yalbin p'nei chaver barabim. And we learn a very deep lesson from this story, that a person should be willing to be cast into a furnace and be destroyed and burnt up, than to embarrass his friend or another fellow person, human, in public. So this is a strange point. So this is what I want to focus the shiur on. Is that a real idea? Is it true that a person should die rather than embarrassing somebody else? Don't we have a principle in the Torah of Yahari Val Yavor that there are certain averos that a person should die for and others that they shouldn't? So why is a person supposed to die in this situation? Why was it appropriate for Tamar to accept her fate of being destroyed because of the fact that she didn't want to embarrass Yehuda? I would say the opposite, that your life is important enough that you should violate this avera of embarrassing somebody in public in order to save your life, your existence. So why is this such a given? What's the idea, the concept behind that it's better that a person die than to embarrass somebody in public? So that's really what I want to focus the shiur on. And then the last Rashi, just the last point, Hakir Na, Ein Na El Lashon Bakasha, Hakir Na, Borecha V'al Tovej Shlosh Nefashos. Na means please, and she's asking him to recognize his creator and don't destroy these three Nefashos, meaning her and the twins that she was carrying. And that's also a separate shir on the Hakir Na, famous, that the Hakir Na is used also in reference to how Yehuda explained the killing of Yosef to his father. But the main question of the shir is tied to the idea before, which is that we learn out from Tamar that it's better to not embarrass somebody in public and you should rather die. And she's actually demonstrating this, that she was willing to be burnt rather than embarrassing Yehuda. So why is that a good idea? Why is that really, why does that concept make sense, that a person should die instead of embarrassing somebody? Why don't we look at it like any other Avera, that I'm allowed to eat pork to prevent my own death? If somebody says, eat pork or you're going to die, you should eat pork. So why don't, if somebody says you're going to die if you don't embarrass somebody in public, or like in this situation, why not embarrass somebody in public? So why? Why is it so bad? So if we look in source number 3, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Ches Amud Beis, goes through 4 different ideas in the philosophical flaw that exists by Malbin Pnei Chavero Barabim. So I wanted to go through each one, and the last one comes back to the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And when we go through the last one, we'll also understand, I think, deeper the story in the Parsha about why Tamar did not embarrass Yehuda and why it was so bad. But if we start, we'll start with each one. We'll go through each one independently, and then we'll explain each one and analyze each one. And then at the end, we'll come to the Parsha, come back to the Parsha. So it's source number 3. Each one's interesting. So it says, Tani Tana Kameder of Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So this Tana, who was teaching Brisos and Mishnayos in the Beis Medrash, he taught this Brisa in front of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Kol Malbin Pnei Chavero Barabim Ki'ilu Shofech Tamim. So the first idea is that if you embarrass somebody publicly, it's as if you're murdering. It's as if you're murdering somebody else. Amar Lei, so he said back to him, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said back to this Tana, Shapir Ka'amris, you're saying good. Dechazina Lei De'azil Sumka V'asi Chivra. How do we know this? We see that when a person is embarrassed, he gets red, and then the red turns into white, and your face becomes pale. So that's the raya, that it's like shofech damim, shvichas damim. So what is this idea? The first point of malbim pnei chavero is that it's equivalent to shvichas damim, and the raya, the proof, is in the way the person's face looks when he gets embarrassed. When a person gets embarrassed, their face turns red at first, and then they become pale. So why is that? Or what does that indicate about the nature of this flaw of called Mabim Pnei Chavero? So if you look in Tosos, we're just going to go through different Mefarshim on this, and then we'll explain the first idea of Mabim Pnei Chavero, Barabim. So Tosos in source number 4 says, the Azil Sumka of Asi Chivra. What does it mean that the blood is there, and it's red, your face is red at first, you blush, and then you turn white. Umashim Madim Betchila Lefisha Adamim Mis Asvin Levroach. So what happens in the beginning? This is this physiological explanation. So the blood pools in your head, and it's ready to escape. And that's why it starts out red, because the blood has to, according to Tosos, the way he's learning it, is the blood has to pool together, and then ultimately it's pooling in order to escape the body. And that's why a person turns pale, ultimately. And that's his explanation. So what is this? What's this idea? Why does it matter how the person's face looks? And why is that a reflection of the shvichas damim, of the idea that malbim pnei chavero is like being shofech damim? What is that idea? And then if we look at the Maharsha, we're just looking at explanations of this this blush and then turning to pale, turning into a pale white face. So it says, that's why it says lahalbin. Lahalbin means to make white. So the Maharsha says, Amar lei shapir ka'amris da'azil sumka pirshu atosos shemadim betchila lefisha damim misasvim livroach. So the same thing, he explains, according to Tosfos, that the blood is pooling together in a person's face when they're embarrassed in order to escape, ultimately. Ad kan lashono. Velo nicha lehu kepashte. This, the pshat is not like him. Dahad mumish hayasham kfar bifnei adam azo vaholecha mislabin panav. That this doesn't happen. It's not that the blood that was there ends up leaving. Dim kain alishna demasis in the paragimel de avos de tani amalbim pnei chavero. Hani mili nami. Hachi de mishum hachi kari malbin el da hacha medam dema le l'shofech damim ka'amar. So rather here it's It's comparing the person or this experience that happens in the person's face to shvichas damim. Shadam is asef livroach. Kemoshim is asef livroach eidei shvichas dam. So the reason why it's Tosus is explaining it the way he's explaining it is that just like by shvichas dam, blood ends up escaping the body in the process of killing somebody, so too over here. V'lashon azol shaholeichem is asef livroach. Same thing. So he's saying that in this way it's similar to shvichas damim, that when a person's embarrassed, the physiology behind the face becoming red is it's showing you or demonstrating that the blood is going to escape, much like when a person dies, and that's what's happening. It's as if you're being shofech the person because it's a similar experience to dying, where when a person dies, you know, the blood escapes or the blood leaves. So too in this experience, but still, like, what's the idea? What is the concept of the flaw here that it's compared to shvichas damim? So that's the question. The last Rishon, and then we'll explain the first point. If anybody has an explanation, you know, just go ahead. But last point. Look at number six, the Chavrusa. The Chavrusa is a compendium to the Gemara, and it just brings down Rishonim and Achronim. So he brings down Rabbeinu Yonah. I couldn't find the Rabbeinu Yonah, but he says sheyesh shnei chalakim b'halbanas panim. He says there's two elements to embarrassing a person. Ha'echad be'etzem silik hadam panav. The first is when the blood leaves the face, and that's like when you murder somebody. And then there's the pain of the paleness of your face, which is worse than death. So he wants to tie this idea that a person should die rather than embarrass somebody to the concept of shvichas damim. But what is this concept? Why is it compared to shvichas damim? So does anybody have a possibility, other than just saying it's really aggressive and really, really mean? But like, why is it compared in specific to shvichas damim, the idea of malbim pnei chavera, and how is it tied to the face? What happens to your face when it happens? So I think the Gemara is explaining the first concept of malbim pnei chavera is explaining that the result of when a person's embarrassed, what happens is that a person typically feels lifeless. They feel like they can't respond, like they're stuck. Everyone's looking at them, staring at them. And the idea of the paleness of the face when a person is embarrassed is a reflection of the fact that he has no strength. He's powerless in that moment. There's a momentary powerlessness on the part of a person who's embarrassed publicly. And we've all been the recipient, I think, most of us have been the recipient of that type of experience where you're so horrified that you can't react. You're the idea of the blood rushing out of your head is the concept. The blood is like the life force of man. It gives man strength and power. But when you're pale, it's like you're gonna pass out. It's as if you're powerlessness. You have no way to react. You're under pressure. You feel psychologically powerlessness. So I think the first idea is that the effect of malbim pnei chavero in some way is a minimized form of misa. Because the idea of misa is a person is the ultimate powerlessness on the part of a person. Because when you're dead, you can't move. You can't. You have no strength. You have no. Obviously, it's only the soul. The soul departs, and the body is lifeless. It has no strength, no power. And the same thing occurs when a person is embarrassed. When a person's embarrassed, he's incapacitated momentarily. So there is a relationship between shvichas damim and halbanas panim and the effect that it has on a person. Of course, shvichas damim is permanent and halbanas panim is temporary, but there is a similar experience on the part of man where there's a feeling or a feeling of lifelessness. That's the experiencers that we can identify with misa, that we relate to death, which is complete and utter powerlessness and weakness. So I think that's the first idea. The first idea is that halbanas panim is treated in some way like shvichas damim because it results in an effect that is somewhat similar to killing a person. It's you're making the person incapacitated. You're making them unable to be alive, unable to respond and to react. And there's a moment where a person feels like that when they're embarrassed in public, and that's really the part of the iser, part of the nature of the stringency of this iser, and the terrible nature of this iser is the effect that you have on the person that's being embarrassed. So I think that's the first idea of malbim pnei chavero. That it produces an incapacitating effect on the recipient of the embarrassment. Okay, so that's the first idea. So the Gemara is giving us that insight. The Gemara is presenting us insights into why malbim pnei chavero is so bad. And this is the first insight. that we shouldn't underestimate the effect it has on the person. It has an effect where the person feels totally powerless. The second idea, so we'll go back to source number three. The second idea, there's four ideas, there's 4 points. So that was the first point. The second is, Amar le Abaye le Rav Dimi. So if you go back to source number three, 2 lines down. Amar le Abaye le Rav Dimi. B'ma'arava b'may zahir. In the West, what were they careful on? What avera? Amar le ba'achvure ape. So in the West, they were very careful not to embarrass people. The Amar Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina said, Akol Yordin le Gehenim. Everyone goes to Gehenim, chutz mishlosha, except for 3 individuals. Hakol sakadaita. So the Gemara says, what do you mean everyone goes down to Gehenna? That's not true. I mean, we say Kol Yisrael Yisrael Chelak Olam Haba. Ela'ema. So what does it mean? Kol Yordin Le Gehenna Olim Chutz Mishlosha Shi Yordin Ve'en Olin. So everyone who goes to Gehenna ultimately comes out of Gehenna. Whatever this means. We're going to try to explain it. Chutz Mishlosha Shi Yordin Ve'en Olin. There are 3 individuals who go into Gehenna. They go to Gehenna, this terrible place. But they don't come out. And who are they? Ve'elohein. Haba al eshes ish. A person who sleeps with a married woman. Ve'hamal ben p'nei chaveo barabim. A person who embarrasses his friend in public. Ve'hamachana shem ra l'chaveiro. And the last one is if you give your friend a nickname that is embarrassing, that is evil in nature. So and those are the 3 cases where a person who does this in their lifetime, they go to Gehenna and they never come out of it. So the Gemara says, a little bit more, he says, Mechana hainu malbin. So the Gemara says, Mechana, giving a person a kinoy, a nickname, is the same thing as embarrassing them. So afal gav the dashbe bishme. So even though this nickname has become regular, everyone calls this person, let's say, like I'm very tall, so everyone calls me tiny. So even if everybody called me tiny, and that had become reinforced, if you say it, so you're one of those individuals who goes to Gehenna and you never come out of it. So the question is, what is the relationship between these 3 cases and what's the idea, the flaw here that is being reflected in not leaving Gehenna, not being able to get out of Gehenna? So again, we have 3 individuals that are compared to one another by the Gemara. The first one is a person who sleeps with his friend's wife, with a married woman. That one seems totally out of place. Then Hamal ben Pnei Chaver Barabim. The second one is where you embarrass your friend in public. And the last one is the nicknamer, the guy who gives nicknames out to his friends. So why are these things coupled together? What's the comparison between the 3? And what's this idea ultimately that a person is stuck in Gehenna and he can't get out of it? So that's the question. Okay. So I think the biggest idea, let's look at Rashi in source number 7, and then we'll come to the concept. But Rashi says, the Dashbe. So what does it mean that he has a nickname that's already commonplace? So he says, Kvar Hurgal Bechach Shemechanim Osokin. So Rashi says that even when a guy has a normal nickname, everyone calls the person tiny, the ain't part of Mislavnos, and he's not embarrassed anymore. Even so, Mikol Makom Zel Hachlimo Miskavin. So even if the guy is not embarrassed by being called a nickname, nevertheless, the person who's naming him this is trying to embarrass him. So it doesn't. So Rashi's Chiddush is saying that the case of Mechana is different than Malbin because even when you don't have the effect that you wanted to on the person, you're still, the intent is really what you're being punished for. And the flaw is part of the intent. So that's what Rashi's approach is. But the Marsha, this is just the facts before we define it, but the Marsha says a little bit different than Rashi, and then we'll explain it. The Marsha says the last case of Mechana is not because you're intending to embarrass the person, but he says, the Dash Bebish may perish Rashi, v'ein pun of Mislavnos, mikol makom zelach limo neskabi adkan lashono, v'udach l'ksas. So he said, he tries to push this off. He says, this isn't really a good answer on Rashi's part. Shie zen nenash kol kach al kavanoso, that a person should be so punished for his kavana. Kevan she'en chaver nichlam, his friend isn't embarrassed. V'ule perusho hayanira denakat hamachana shem ra, dehavale kemoti shem ra. Afi me'en chaver misbayesh. So if not for Rashi, I would have said that the problem is that you're creating a bad name for the person. Even if he's not embarrassed, you're affecting his reputation. Because when you call a person by a bad nickname, his reputation is affected and negatively. So the Marsha says that he would learn it like that. But he says the Rambam's not like that. But the Marsha gives a different explanation. He says, without Rashi, he would have explained it, that the flaw is not based on your intent, but it's based on the fact that you're really harming the reputation of the person. Okay, so what's the main question is, what's the coupling of these three? What's the comparison between the three, especially the idea of Ashes Ish? And also, what's the idea of not leaving Gehenna, not being able to get out of Gehenna? So the first question, I think, can be answered by Ashes Ish. So what is the nature of Ashes Ish? There's two elements to Ashes Ish and the flaw of Ashes Ish. One is the taiva, one is the lust that you feel towards your friend's wife. But the other is the effect that you have on the husband of the woman who cheated. So the husband, it's really both. I think one of the mafarshim say it's really ben adam amakom and ben adam achavero, because it's ben adam amakom because a person is really giving into his taiva, his instincts, and he can't control himself. But it's also ben adam amakom because when you sleep with another man's wife, what it does is it really destroys the man, the husband who was cheated on. It destroys his masculinity. It destroys his whole sense of, especially for a man, masculinity is such an important element of self-worth that it destroys him psychologically. It destroys a person's self-worth. So I think that the Gemara is not highlighting the taiva aspect of Ashes Ish, but it's highlighting the other aspect, that there's a real psychological destruction that you are attempting or that you're succeeding in when you sleep with another man's wife. It's not just giving in to the taiva, but it's also destroying the other man, destroying the husband, and destroying his psychological self-esteem, self-worth. So I think that all these three cases now make sense, because Gemara is saying that in all these cases, what you're doing is you're destroying a person psychologically. When you embarrass a person publicly, you're really destroying the person psychologically. And according to Rashi, when you nickname a person, you're really belittling. Because what does it mean to nickname a person? You're belittling them. You're really giving them, you're trying to sum up their whole existence in one word. You know, you're this, you're that. So all of those are really an attempt to psychologically demean the person, belittle the person, and really destroy them. So these are all levels of psychological destruction that you execute when you perform these deeds, these averos. So the Gemara, I think, is coupling these three together because it's focusing on non-physical, the worst type of non-physical destruction, which is the greatest psychological destruction, is really expressed in these three cases. When you sleep with a man's wife, when you embarrass a person publicly, and when you nickname them. So the nickname, it depends on how you learn. Rashi is saying it's your intent. Your intent is just as aggressive, and just as it's the same attempt to destroy the person, but not in a physical way. And you're destroying the person in the most psychological, non-physical way possible. And the last idea, according to the Marsha, is the other way, that really you're destroying the person socially, that you're making it unable for the person to escape a social perception of him. Because if everyone sees you, even if you're not embarrassed, if everyone sees you as this nickname, so that affects your ability to, it affects you, it affects your ability to succeed. So you're really destroying a person, according to the Marsha, on a sociological level. But according to Rashi, he's saying you're destroying a person psychologically. But either way, the Gemara is saying that these averos are really tied to one another. They're all an attempt by the person to really destroy, to perform the greatest destruction in a non-physical way, which would be in these three examples, these three instances. Okay, so what does it mean to go down to Gehenna and come back? So that's a tough one. Very tough idea. So it sounds like there's different ways you can explain that, but it could be explained that a person has a certain this flaw is ingrained to a certain degree in a person, and a person is so removed from the good or from the proper idea when he is involved in these chataim that he can never benefit. He can't benefit from the good of Olam Haba. So that's one possibility. But the Rabbeinu Tam says, I didn't bring this in the Peshor sheets, but Rabbeinu Tam says that the case where you're in Gehenna forever by Ashes Ish is a case where there's a mamzer. That when you impregnate the woman that you slept with and she has a mamzer, she has a child, that's the case where you're in Gehenna. But when it's not, when there's no child, there's no child as a result of your act, so then you're like everybody else. So I think, according to that Tosfos, I think there's a different element here, which is that there's a certain permanence to the effect of these actions, that when you sleep with a man's wife and you have a child, there's something that can't be undone. It's mu'uvas lo yuchal lisko, and that's what Tosfos says. It's something that can't be undone. When you embarrass somebody publicly, it's something that can't be undone. You really can't undo it. You can try to. You can ask for mechila, but once you embarrass somebody publicly, there's a perception that's created. Either it affects a person permanently, mentally, or there's a perception that's created that can't just go away. And same thing with mechana shem ra. So maybe the idea, according to Tosfos, of going to Gehenna and not coming out is showing you that when there's a permanence to the chit, so then there's a permanent effect as well. So when there's a permanence to the chit that you're involved in, when there's a chit that can't be undone, that it's something that you've done that's so negative that it has a permanent flaw, a permanent effect in the world. So that type of chait is something that can't, that really, that type of flaw is something that is very difficult to remove yourself from because of the level of permanence of the chait. So maybe that's the idea. That's the approach that I want to try. So the idea of never getting out of Gehenna is a demonstration of the permanence, the fact that this thing can never change in this world, that you can never change having a mamzer. It's too late. There's nothing that could be undone about that. So that's reflected in the ultimate reward and punishment that you get in the next world. The last idea, the third idea, and then the fourth idea, coming back to Tamar. So the third idea is by David. So now this is one last point. So the Gemara says, go back to source number 3. We're going in order. Source number 3 says, Amar Rava bar Bar Chana, Amar Rav Yochanan. Noach lo adam shiyavo safik ishes ish val yalbim pnei chaver barabim. So now he says that it's better for a person to sleep with a safik ishes ish, a woman who we're not sure is married or not, and rather than embarrass somebody else in public. Minolon, where do we know this from? Midadarash Rava, Didarash Rava, Maidich Siv, Vitsali Samchu, Vinesvu, Karu Vilodamu. So David wrote in Tehillim that people were very critical of his relationship with Bathsheba. And he says that with my limp, they were happy and they gathered up to make fun of David and to embarrass David. Karu velo damu, they tore my skin and I didn't have any blood come out. Amar David lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, Galoi v'yadoi lefanecha, she'ema yumekarim besari lo yadam yishos yis aretz. So David was a faster. He fasted so much that after his chait, and when he recognized his chait, that he said to Hashem, you know that if my skin was torn, there would be no blood to come out of me because I've been fasting for so long. V'lo od ela afilu b'shasha oskim b'negon ba'olos omrim li David habal ishes ish misaso b'ma. And even when Chazal, the Chachamim, were involved in negon and olos, which are taharos, they would ask me, what is the misa for a person who sleeps with an ishes ish? Meaning they were trying to get David and embarrass him. V'ani omer lahem misaso b'chenek. So I said to them that the misa is bechenek with strangulation, v'yeshlo chelek olam haba. But the person who sleeps with a married woman, he does get a chelek. Ava hamalbin es pnei chaver barabim ein lo chelek olam haba. But if you're malbin, pnei chaver barabim ein lo chelek olam haba. So we see from David that it's better to sleep with a safik ishes ish, which is Bathsheba. She was a safik ishes ish because her husband went to war and he gave her a get, and the get was al tanai. So it was a suffix whether she was divorced or not. So it's better to sleep with a woman who's a suffocatious ish than it is for a person to be embarrassed or to embarrass somebody else in public. So the third idea, the question is, what's the comparison? What is this suffocatious ish idea? Why is it comparable and why is it better to sleep with a suffocatious ish than to not be malbim pnei chaver barabim? Okay, so the third idea, I think, about malbim pnei chavero is that a suffik ishes ish is the case where there is, the suffik ishes ish is the case where there is no aggression, where it's just taiva, because she's a suffik ishes ish. She's not really married, it's just a technicality that she's married. But it's a suffik whether she was divorced or not. So really that's a choice between a person destroying somebody else publicly, which is really the ultimate expression of man's aggression, a person's aggression, versus taiva in the most basic form, which is a suffik ishes ish. So the question the Gemara is saying is, which one is worse? Is it worse for a person to give in to their taiva and just give in ultimately to their desire and their lust? Or is it worse for a person to give in to their aggression and their unfettered aggression, which is malbim pnei chaver l'rabim? So the third idea is teaching us that the flaw of aggression is greater than the flaw of taiva. that when a person has a choice between, or if a person were to choose between having a flaw that was pure taiva, just lust, versus where it's just pure aggression, pure taiva is a far better flaw to have than pure aggression. Why? Because, like the Rambam says in Deos, when a person is haughty, they make fun of somebody else, they're being completely aggressive, trying to destroy somebody else, which is a sign of haughtiness. V'shachachta sad Hashem Elokecha, it's really a sign of a person being a kofer, not really being able to recognize God. Whereas when a person's involved in taiva, just separate yourself. You can overcome that. A person can draw his instincts into learning. He can take the energy and move him into other areas. So the third idea of Mabim Pnei Chavero is that it's really unfettered aggression. And in terms of flaws, it's even worse than the flaw of taiva, than the flaw of just giving into lust. And that's why the Gemara compares it to a Suffolk Ishus Ish. Because by Ishus Ish, there's an element of aggression. Because you're trying to embarrass and remove the masculinity of the husband. But when it's a Suffolk Ishus Ish, it's just pure taiva. And the Gemara is saying, when you have a choice between pure taiva versus pure aggression, Mavim Pnei Chaver Barabim, destruction, so the worst flaw is destruction. Because destruction is really a sign of a person's haughtiness, which is something that's really antithetical to God. Whereas taiva is just a person who can't control himself. So the Gemara is teaching us that Mabim Pnei Chavero is a far worse avera, flaw, than taiva, than just give it Suffolk Ishus Ish. So there's one last idea. Now we come back to Tamar and Yehuda. So the question that was bothering me in the beginning of this year is that why is it better for a person to die than to not embarrass their friend? So the Tosos, in source number 11, he actually says, Noach lo la'adam shiyapil atmo silch kifshan eish. This is in Sota. It's the same Gemara. Kida amar beperka zav. He quotes our Gemara. Kol yordin l'gehenem olin chutz mishlusha. V'cha minayu hamabim pnei chaver baravim. So he brings down that Gemara that we just read. The Omer Nami Noach lo la'adam shiyivol safek ishis ish val yabim pnei chaver baravim. V'nalim midavid. V'nira haid lo chashiv. Okay, so he says that we learn out from David. So he says, V'nira haid lo chashiv le bahadi shlusha averos. Shein omdim bifnei pikuach nefesh. Why isn't one of the three averos that you can't violate and lose your life over? Avodos kochavim megilei aras shvichas damim. Mishum da averos halbanas panim ena mufureshes betorah. V'lo nakad el averos hamufureshes. So Tosa says that avodos kochavim gilei aras and shvichas damim are open in the Torah, but halbanas panim is really learnt out. But really, ultimately, he says that it is yaharig val yavor. So Tosas learns that it's Yaharig Val Yavor. It's just not included in the set of Yaharig Val Yavor because it's not technically in the Torah, learned out in the Torah per se, but it's learned out from Chazal, from a diak in the Torah. But what kind of idea is that? What kind of idea is it that a person is supposed to die for this Avera? Why should you die for this Avera? So I think with that, we can go back to our story to try to explain why. So the idea, the question we had in the beginning of the Shir was, why did Tamar not expose Yehuda? So the Ramban, we'll look at the Ramban. He doesn't take up the question directly, but he gave me some insight into how to answer that. So the Ramban says on the idea of Sreifa, so the question the Mefarshim ask is, why was she chayv Sreifa? Why was she chayv to be burnt? Normally it's chenek, it's strangulation. So the Ramban says, Amar Ephraim, Maksha Talmido Shor Rabbi Meir, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Tamar Bitol Shol Shem Haisa, Shu Koin, Lefichach, Danua B'Sreifa, Zekas of Rashi. So the first answer is that Tamar was a daughter of Shem. She was a descendant of Shem, the son of Noach. And she was a Bas Kohen. And because Shem was Malki Tzedek, who was a Kohen, therefore the general din by a Bas Kohen is Srefa, by an Anusa, by a woman who's betrothed. And she cheats on the person that she's betrothed to. So she's killed with Srefa. That's Rashi. He says, V'lo Pirshu, V'ani lo yadati ad din hazeh. So the Ramban says, I don't understand this. I don't know this din. Shabaskoin ina chayeves sreifa elibiznus imzika sabal. A bas kohen is only chayev to be burnt when she's actually connected to the baal, married. Arusa o nesua, either she's betrothed or she's married. Kemo shemefurash begemara b'Sanhedrin, as explained in Sanhedrin, aval bas kohen shomeres yavam shezinsa ena b'misa klal. But a bas kohen who's awaiting yibam, she's awaiting the ability to marry the brother of her deceased husband. If she cheats, there's no, you're not chayv misa in that case. She wasn't married to the Yavam. She wasn't married to Shelah. Tamar didn't get married yet. So if she cheated, she shouldn't have been chayv misa. Uvein Bas Yisrael, Uvein Bas Kohen, Eina Ela Belav Greda. It's only an Isser. It's not, there's no Aveira of Misa. There's no Onesh of Misa. It's just an Isser. It's a prohibition. Ve'im Tomar, Shahaya HaYibam Noeg B'Vnei Noach. Maybe you'll say that Yibam was practiced by the B'nei Noach. Ve'hi Lahem Bechlal Eishasish. And she should be treated like an Eishasish. Ve'azhar Shalahem Zuhi Misasam. And by Ben Noach, when they violate one of their laws, they're always Chayv Misa, even by Gzela, for example. Ve'alohem Omrem, Shehuda Hiskel B'mitzvahs Yibam Tchila, Ve'vechem B'gemar Sanhedrin. But they break that down, the Rosh Ramban breaks that down, because he says Yibam started with Yehuda. So it didn't exist beforehand by the B'nai Noach. Mochiach she'en yevama b'v'nei Noach chayev eskla. Fine. So he says that it can't be that she's really chayev sreifa. So why was she supposed to be burnt? V'nirli shahe Yehuda katzin shoter emoshel ba'aretz. So Yehuda was really a leader. And he was a very strong, powerful leader. V'akala asher tizna love enena nidonis kemishpat shar anashim. She shouldn't be treated, akala, a daughter-in-law, that cheats on him or embarrasses him, shouldn't be treated like regular individuals. Ach kim avazes hamalchus. It was as if she was defaming the malchus. The alkein kasev vayomer Yehuda hotziuha v'sisareif. That's why Yehuda says she should be burnt. Ki bo lefun of lasos buk echosher tzitzave. He really had the ability to do what he wanted with her because he was the melech and she was rebelling against the Malach, the Malchus. Who chayev osa misa l'mala hamalchus, l'masa malchus. Why was she chayev to be killed? Because of the Malchus, because he was a Melech, and it's worse when you embarrass a Melech than just a regular person. V'shafar osa k'mechaleles esavia l'chavod kohonasa. And he treated her as if she was embarrassing her father out of respect for the kohuna. Lo shehaya din hadyotos kain. This wasn't the regular din. So this is the idea that the Ramban is saying. That why was she chayv misa? Why was she chayv sreifa? Because she embarrassed Yehuda. Yehuda was melech, he was the leader, and an embarrassment to the leader, to the king, is really deserving of death, more so than just a regular case. So this gave me an idea. So why was Tamar so reluctant in the story, in the parsha, to embarrass Yehuda? Why was she so reluctant? So the Ramban gave me an idea about Yehuda. See, the character of Yehuda that was Malchus, and you see that Yehuda ultimately becomes Melech Yisrael, and because of his characteristics, and of course the way he acted with regard to the brothers and getting Yosef back, he was rewarded with Malchus Yisrael. But he always demonstrated leadership. He was the one who decided to sell Yosef to the Yishmaelim. So he's always demonstrating leadership, and that was his character. So maybe, perhaps, Tamar realized that if she had exposed Yehuda, so it would have really destroyed, ultimately could have destroyed the whole his whole role in the Mesorah, his whole idea, his whole role as Melech, as Malchus Yisrael, as Melech Yisrael, in the Mesorah and in the tradition of Yehadus, could have been destroyed through her exposing him. Because for two, either it would be so embarrassing for him that the respect would be lost for him, and he could never carry on to be leader of Klal Yisrael the way that he ultimately did, or ultimately his own confidence and his own ability to lead would be psychologically traumatized by the fact that he was embarrassed by his daughter-in-law. So either way, Tamar recognized that the effects of her embarrassment were far, far more reaching than just a personal embarrassment. The effects of her embarrassment could have affected the whole entire future of Klal Yisrael, the whole entire structure of Malchus Klal Yisrael, that Yehuda was Melech, and of course Aaron and Levi was Kohen. There was a whole structure to Klal Yisrael, and the whole structure could have been disrupted by Tamar's exposing of Yehuda. So the idea that the Ramban is alluding to, or at least what I gained from the Ramban and the Tosfos and the Gemara, is why is it better to die rather than to embarrass? Because the ultimate example of this embarrassment is the case of Tamar and Yehuda, where the embarrassment could be so traumatic or so damaging that it could really destroy, in this situation, it could have destroyed Klal Yisrael, could have destroyed the very foundation of Klal Yisrael. So it's showing you the extent or the level of damage that could be reaped upon the world from being Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim. And the most extreme is Tamar. And that's why Tamar made the right decision by not exposing Yehuda. Because even had she died, at least there was some ability to preserve Klal Yisrael. At least maybe Yehuda could do tshuva, or he could still demonstrate Malchus. But if she were to expose this and really demean him in public, it would have affected his role as the Melech of Klal Yisrael, ultimately in the future. So it just shows you in the story, the end lesson from the embarrassment it's not embarrassing lessons from Tamar, but the lessons about embarrassment from Tamar. It shows you that Tamar was very perceptive as to the role, the ultimate role. And in fact, that's what the Gemara says. Just to go back, the Gemara says that that's why Tamar was so insistent on sleeping with Yehuda in the first place. She really wanted to be part of the Shevet Yehuda. She wanted to be part of Klal Yisrael, and she recognized that this was the only way to do so. But you see that she was very, it was an Avera Lishma. She was very perceptive of the role that Yehuda, the potential of Yehuda in Klal Yisrael, and she didn't want to destroy that. She was willing to die rather than have her actions lead to the potential destruction of Klal Yisrael. So I think that's what this story is trying to teach us. Okay, so I just wanted, so that's really the end of the shiur, but I want, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it's like an obvious question, but if the reason was because of Klal Yisrael for Tamar, so how can you learn like a general...
Right, so maybe it's saying that because of that example, we see that a lot of the effects of the, we see the potential effects of being Malbim Pnei Chavero, they're far more reaching than they could be far more reaching than we might want to believe or might not think. And I guess it's saying, it's a good question. I mean, why not just limit it to this example? I'm saying that this example is the most extreme example of it. And that's why they learn it out from this example, because it's showing you that being Malbim Pnei Chavero can really have a very destructive effect on the world. But it's a good question. I mean, why not just in those types of situations? Why do we learn from to every situation? So I think that would be a machlokas between the Rambam and Tosos, because Tosos learns that this is in general part of Yehari Val Yavor, which is hard to understand. But the Rambam does not bring this down as part of Yehari Val Yavor. So maybe the Rambam would not say that it's really Yehari Val Yavor, but he would learn it like this, that he would learn it, that it's really just demonstrating of this idea of being Noach Lo, that a person should not be cast into a Kivshan, is really the most extreme case of Malbim Pnei Chavero. So I don't know how to explain Tosfos, good question, but at least the Rambam's way of learning, because he does not learn that Malbim Pnei Chavero is Yehari Val Yavor. So the Rambam would say what we're saying, which is, I believe, that the Torah is expressing the most extreme possible damage that could occur from a Malbim Pnei Chavero. So in that case, that's why it would be better for her to die than to expose Yehuda. All right, so just summarize the shiur. There's 4 points in the shiur. The first point is the effects of... it's considered like Shvichas Damim, Malbim Pnei Chavero. Why? Because of the fact that a person's incapacitated temporarily. And that's really how we identify Misa with Misa, that it's a state that a person's in where they're really incapacitated. That's a permanent incapacitation. This is temporary, but it's really, there's a similarity in terms of the feeling that a person has, and it's, we identify that with death. The second idea is the grouping of the three individuals that get Gehenna and they don't get out. And we were saying that that's an expression of trying to destroy a person on a psychological, non-physical level. So there are three ways that you can destroy a person psychologically. One is when you sleep with another man's wife, you're really destroying his masculinity, and that's really tied to man's self-esteem, self-worth. The other is when you're malbim pnei chaver barabim. So that also is destroying a person psychologically. And mechan hashem ra is either social, that you're really like socially destroying the person, you're not giving him an opportunity to succeed socially, or your intent. Your intent is really to destroy. And then the third idea is comparing Suffolk Ishus Ish, which is different than Ishus Ish itself, because there's no aspect of aggression there. It's more just Taiva, to the case over here of Malbim Pnei Chavero. They're both extremes. One's an extreme of Taiva, and the other's an extreme of aggression. So the Gemara says, what's better? The extreme of Taiva. Why? Because the extreme of aggression is really antithetical to the idea of God. Whereas the extreme of Taiva is something that could be undone, a person can work on, they can overcome, but the extreme of aggression is really antithetical philosophically to the idea of God. And the last idea is this idea of that you should die rather than be Malbim. Why? Because you see from Tamar and Yehuda the potential extent of the damage. Because why was she willing to die? Because of the fact that she realized that Yehuda's role as Melech could have been compromised if she had exposed him. And she wanted to preserve the role of Yehuda, or the potential role of Yehuda in Klal Yisrael. And she recognized that by exposing him, it could have created a destructive aspect to the whole foundation of Klal Yisrael, of the Shvatim. So she was very perceptive and very careful, and that's the extreme example, like the Rambam might say, the most extreme example of Malbim Pnei Chavero Barabim. So that's what the Gemara is teaching us. All right. So everybody, thank you. Thank you so much. Have a good Shabbos. Thank you.
Thanks. Can I ask one more question?
Of course.